welcome to Untold. I'm very excited today. We have a slightly different format of an episode, but I'm excited to welcome back Mr. Jason Kipp. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Lovely Jason, to be here. And it is actually Doctor, but I rarely use my PhD.
I did that last time, and I was just about to say, I think you were one of the first guests we ever had on Untold back in the day when Mariana was still with me.
Yeah.
And I think Giles Brooke was number one, and I think you were number two. And I did exactly the same thing. And I even thought to myself this morning, make sure you put the Doctor in the introduction.
I rarely get to use it, so like whenever I can, I kind of want to brag about it.
Mate, absolutely, you have to. Why not? I wish I could put it at the beginning of mine. How's everything going, mate?
Good, yes. A few weeks to go before the Bread and Jam Festival, so it's all hands on deck, but it's looking really good. Yeah.
Wicked. Well, so this episode, I want to, as we spoke about before we hit record, I want to focus on Bread and Jam, because I think for me personally, I've been the last few years, and I remember three setting out the Savourists, and we've been on a fucking weird journey with the Savourists from bars to where we are now, but I remember before I even started the Savourists, I came to a Bread and Jam, and I remember I genuinely think that it was that festival that gave me that like pick up the arse to kind of actually go and do something. And I remember seeing people sort of speak and just being in that buzzy vibe and just coming away being like, oh my God, I need to be in this like full time. Yeah. So first of all, I want to sort of take it back and just hear from you what Bread and Jam is and sort of where it came about.
100%, yeah, and I totally agree with you. There's a real magic in the room when it happens. But so to take it back, I started in food and drink from a completely different industry. I was a TV producer making reality TV shows, bought a band in Olive Grove in Italy, on the east coast of Italy, and started making olive oil with my partner. So I knew nothing about the food and drink industry, nothing about agriculture, and I had to learn very fast. So this was back in 2004, and you know, I googled how to start a food business. There was bugger all there. There were no communities. There was no like book on how to start a food business. And I was like, wow, I'm amazed. Surely I'm not the first person to start a food business. But you know, I scrabbled together bits of information. But it was when I came back to the UK to do a trade show. I did Speciality Fine Food Fair in like 2005, and expecting, you know, to go there to meet buyers. But what the magic was talking to the other stallholders and how generous they were with their information. And they were telling me names of buyers and where to get my packaging and what the hell margins were and all this kind of stuff. And I thought, wow, this community is so like incredibly collaborative and supportive and willing to give, you know, hard-earned information and advice. And someone's got to like harness that. So move 10 years forward, when I sold my olive oil business, I was like, well, let's do something that where we basically get a load of food entrepreneurs in a room sharing knowledge and intel, because you know, the challenger brand world is really tough. We're up against the big guys who have access to loads of kind of information and marketing insight and PR support and whatever, and we don't have anything like that, but we got each other. So in 2016, I think, me and my co-founder started Bread and Jam. And it's pretty much like it is today, a 2-day event, loads of different content going on in 5 different rooms. The content's really relevant and spot on for what people need, solves a lot of pain points because, you know, I've been there and done it. I'm also got my a new brand that I'm starting. So I'm still very much on the front edge of the food startup world. But yeah, it's a 2-day event, 5 different rooms, 2 workshop rooms. One's focused on kind of early stage businesses. One's for businesses a bit further down the line. We've got the keynote room with amazing speakers. This year we've got Giles Brooke again, you know, who is an amazing food and drink investor. We've got Charlie Biggums, who's managed to get people like to trade up in these tough economic times to his posh meals. We've got Perfect Ted, who've come from 0 to 100 in like 2 years. How the hell did they do it? They'll be sharing their story. We've got Renee from Planet Organic. You know, she's going to be talking about the buyback of Planet Organic and all that journey and story. Yeah. I mean, I could go on.
Yeah,
we've got loads of great stuff.
Yeah, no. I think it's amazing, mate. And I think the caliber every year is wonderful. And then talk to me about, like, because you guys have like lots of suppliers and stuff there as well, right? What does that look like?
Yeah, so in addition to these five content rooms, we have a thing called the pitching zone. One of the biggest challenges for emerging brands is accessing buyers. Right, they're the gatekeepers to listings, and they're really hard to get hold of. They're really overworked and overwhelmed, and it's just a small percentage of their job to kind of find new suppliers. So what happens is that we got 21 different retailers coming to our event, and they go from the big supermarkets like Sainsbury's, Tesco's, Co-op, Ocado, to the specialty retailers like Planet Organic, Selfridges, Whole Foods. We've got a load of wholesalers coming this year as well, like Cotswold Fair, Diverse, Mahalo, and then we got a pub chain, Wadworth, and a couple of airlines, Virgin Atlantic and BA. And what happens is that anyone with a ticket to the event can apply to pitch to these outlets through our website. The deadline's this Sunday for applications. Then we send those applications to each buyer, and they choose who they want to see. So Ocado, for example, we might get 70 people applying, and Ocado will see like 20, 25 of them at our event. If you get selected by the buyer, you get 10 minutes in front of them, face-to-face in a private meeting. It's a really good introduction. And if that goes well, then you'd want to have a further follow-up meeting, send in some samples, that kind of thing. And we also do a really good workshop on, because a 10-minute pitch is really quite tricky and focused.
Yeah,
and you've got to convince the buyer. So we've got a really good workshop that we run beforehand that kind of spells out exactly what should be in that pitch. It should actually be about a 6-minute run through of a deck with all the appropriate information, and then leave a few minutes for questions. And loads of listings have come from that over the years. The buyers love it because they get to meet a whole chunk of innovative brands in a small space of time, and they can tell after 10 minutes whether there's any kind of mileage in it. So that's a great opportunity.
Yeah, amazing. And I think as well, just like, even if, like, obviously if the listings come off the back of it or another meeting comes off the back of it, I think just being able to be put in a situation where, to your point, you have to hone it to 6 minutes is a great exercise for any business. Like, just to have to go in and be like, I remember very early doors, I can't remember who it was, maybe it was Whole Foods, and we ended up getting a listing off the back of that. We had a follow-up meeting with bars, and I remember sat outside, and it's funny what the journey you go on, but this must have been, I don't know, good four or five years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember sat outside, properly sort of clammy hands, getting really nervous to go in and meet this bar. And then you sit down and you're like, oh, okay, cool. Like, this is amazing. The atmosphere in there and the camaraderie. I think the biggest thing for me that comes off the back of sort of being at the festival is you've either got brands who are there because they've got something to say in terms of the journey that they've been on, or you've got people who are listening because they want to become those brands. So like, it's very unlikely that you're ever in a scenario where just everything in the room is like inherited. Okay, there's obviously unbelievable amounts of negatives that we go on to all the time, and that's kind of what this podcast normally focuses on. But it's so nice, sorry, excuse me, being in an environment where it's just inherent positivity, right? Everyone is like, it's positive, but it's also like opportunistic. It's exciting because it's kind of bringing together a group of people that all want to be doing similar things. It's
100%. There is a real energy, and you will go away with your head absolutely buzzing and exploding with information. But just to kind of slightly counter that, I do really make sure that that people are talking, they tell the truth.
Yeah,
because as you know, and you covered it a lot in your podcast, there's a load of bullshit in this industry about, you know, you just have to work hard, be passionate, and it'll all come to you. Which you know, we had a couple of speakers in our first year who said that kind of stuff, and they were not invited back. And since then, I'm like very clear that it's got to be the warts and all story.
Of course.
Because as much as anything, there's no one formula for success. Like, people have done it so many different ways, and there's so many different ways to skin a cat. And nearly everyone I know, they've been up against it and had to make tough decisions and nearly lost it all. And we just got to be honest about that, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And that's where I think the learnings really come, right? There was an amazing quote. I can't remember who said it. I feel like it was some sort of quite... I can't remember who it was, but it was basically like, there's no such thing as failure, just learnings. And I was like, it's a really kind of almost slightly like ridiculous, like sat on your wall type, live, live, laugh, smile bullshit. But I was also like, actually, when you unpick it, it is amazing. Because if you go, actually, like, there's no such thing as failures, it's just learnings. You go like, actually, if you reframe your mind to be in that situation, you're likely to learn faster, because you're not really, that whole fail fast, it then turns into like learn fast. And it's quite an interesting way of reframing that mindset.
Something that I've been thinking a lot about recently, I don't know what your view on this is, that there's, so the kind of, one of the entrepreneurial characteristics is that you've got to be stubborn as fuck. Like, everyone's telling you no, and it's impossible, and you've got to go for it. But you've also got to balance this with being able to listen to feedback, and knowing when to stop going in that direction because it's not working. Yeah. Everything's telling you not to go there, and it's just an idea that I've been playing with, and I don't know. It's such a tricky balance that I don't know.
100%.
Yeah,
I don't think there's an answer to it other than like, I think it's get one of the things that we learned recently with the launch of Crunches was like, get it, just fucking get it into buyers' hands, just get it into trade, which is why I think this pitching zone at Bread and Jam is amazing, because my mate Stu from down the road that works in finance, am I going to listen to him whether he thinks it's going to be a good product on shelf?
Yeah, right.
Of course not. But am I going to listen to a Waitrose buyer? Yes, probably yes, I should. And I think that's when you start going like, where do your sort of key people, like for me, Mark Palmer, I used to work for him at Causton Press, and he still now to this day, like unofficially, is a mentor and incredibly helpful in everything I do. Like, he's someone I definitely listen to. But I think when you go, the second you get it into trade, like I remember with bars, even very early days before we even put it in packaging, we put it in front of some buyers and they were like, not sure about this. And I probably should have listened at that moment. Yeah. Whereas with Crunches, we sold, went to EasyJet meeting. We didn't even have it in packaging, and we won EasyJet off the back of just a product.
Amazing.
Before it was
in packaging.
So you're like, you can kind of get to that point where you're like, all right, I know who I'm listening to now. But to your point, it's so fascinating.
That kind of segues nicely into a couple of features that we have at Bread and Jam, which I really love and I think are really powerful. One is called the Tasting Panel, which is it's an add-on ticket that you buy, but it's the Tasting Panel, and you get 10 minutes in front of three buyers for honest feedback. So we try and mix up the buyers, so they're a mixture of kind of maybe supermarket and wholesaler and speciality and deli, and you sit down there with your product, you show it to them, you say, this is the price point, this is the route to market, this is the messaging, what do you think? And that, like, to get 10 minutes of feedback is amazing opportunity from three buyers. And then we got another one called the Point of Difference Pod, which is, again, you get 10 minutes, but in front of three industry experts that you normally wouldn't be able to afford to access. So they might be like, they might be product developer, they might be a marketeer, a salesperson, an ex-buyer, a branding person. And again, you get like, this is my product. These are my challenges. What do you think? And again, it's like 10 minutes of really amazing access to feedback that is really valuable.
I think it's amazing. Because I think one of the challenges in early day founders is a sense of ego. Ego is probably the wrong word. A sense of pride in what they've done. And therefore, there's almost like, if someone says, oh, no, it's not quite right, it goes back to this like learning versus failure. It's like, if you sit in that room on that pod or on the other panel and people go, tasting panel, sorry, and people go, I don't think this is quite right. And you've come away and you've gone, I don't know, you've spent X amount on Bread and Jam, you've gone to that tasting panel. That then frames what you should be doing for the rest of your business. Rather than being like, oh my God, this industry person told me it's not right. You change that to be like, oh my God, I've listened to someone that's now put me on the correct path and kind of move. I think there's a lot of like, there's a lot. And I was there myself in the early days where like, it's so key to just stop being so fragile. Like, it's not made of glass. A business is going to pivot and change. And if you're going to be made of glass and take that feedback as a negative, then it's never going to turn into a success. Does that make sense? Whereas that being able to access that from like, the benefit there is actually you sit down and someone goes, this isn't right, but here's what you do. Whereas if you go, I think what I'm waffly trying to say here is like, if you ask people for feedback like that round about what you're saying, who you listen to, and someone goes, oh my God, this is bloody brilliant. And actually they're just lying to your face because they don't want to have that confrontation. It's so much more beneficial to actually have the like, this isn't right, and you tweak and change.
100%. 100%. So it's all about listening. But, you know, again, it's that fine balance of, well, these are my red lines maybe, or this is, you know, I'm not going to change this, or this is what I really believe in, or I'm going to, it is that tricky balance between being stubborn and listening.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think the stubbornness has to come from like the mission of the business and the what you're trying to achieve with the product you have. And the feedback is probably more around like taste, texture, like pack sizes, pricing, all that sort of stuff that like industry guys will really be able to tell you versus like the passion of solving the healthy tasting tension, which is what we do. I'm buzzing just talking about it. It's really exciting. And how do you feel about it personally? You must be so proud of like where it's come and how it's come about.
Yeah. I don't give myself very much time to kind of think about that. We do get an immense amount of love after the event. My missus is always telling me to listen to that, but you know, we get a lot of really nice feedback that how valuable it is and how supportive it is and the opportunities it creates. But you know what it's like. We're not very good at listening to positive shit. We just hear the negative shit.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's next, isn't it? It's interesting. So Untold for listeners as well. Untold are hosting a session on Mental Health Toolkit, which I'm really excited for. And we've got some great guests on the panel. We've got Deepak from Unbox. We've got Dan Broughton from Grenade and Lucy Busk from Nice Wine. I'm really excited about that one, and I think it's a really nice like kudos for thank you for allowing us to be part of it, because I think it's a really great kind of opportunity for us to really open up that kind of warts and all conversation and find out the hard times and there's
absolutely
we had Deepak go on.
I was gonna say it's a killer packet, panel. Yeah. Really good people I really admire.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting one. Like, we had Deepak on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he's going through the most amazingly fascinating transition in his business at the moment, which I'm like super excited to unpick on like a live event. I think it's going to be fascinating.
In one of my favorite rooms. It's called the panel room. So it's like three food founders talking about a particular topic. So I love hearing from from the people themselves about their journeys. And we'll often get, I mean, I don't know if it's so relevant in your particular panel, but in the other panels, we'll get, I'm very keen to make it clear that there isn't one route to success. So we'll get three panelists who've got very kind of different experiences, or we've got to the same place by completely different routes, whether it's around funding or how to get a manufacturer or getting your first supermarket listing. So I'm really keen to people to share stories that show that there are many ways to do it and lots of pitfalls along the way.
Yeah, definitely. I think you look at like even some of the like big brands that have kind of burst through that challenger sort of scene. You look at something like a Moju or a Pippinot or a Dashwater, like maybe not so much Dash, that's a slightly different journey, but a Moju, when you look back to when Charlie and Rich were slinging smoothies in a car park to where they are now, you're like, fuck hell, like the journey that those guys went on pivoting into shots. And that's only really been probably the last sort of 3-4 years where shots have become a thing, and they're now this like unbelievable brand where Danone are involved, and like it's pretty crazy. And I remember seeing Rich speak, not last year because that was on, he was on the big stage, but I remember him seeing him speak somewhere a few years ago and being like, oh yeah, this is kind of like a cool concept. But it wasn't when Moju was the holy grail that Moju is today. Do you know what I mean?
I remember that. I mean, it's a perfect example of me thinking, whoa, ginger shots, they're never going to catch on, are they?
Yeah, it's amazing. And even the experts, I remember like speaking to Charlie Lee Kirk, because we both did something called Escape the City, like years and years. And on separate cohorts, he was slightly before us, but I met Charlie through that. And we were talking about like cause and press and blah 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 blah, and he like, and then Mark Palmer came up in conversation, and he was like, Charlie was like, oh yeah, Mark took a look at ginger shots and was like, there's absolutely no way it's going to work. And there's a classic example of like,
yeah,
your ex marketing director of Pret a Manger, founder of like cause and press, Forest Feast, like some unbelievable brands, and you're like, it kind of comes back to that. So your listening piece, right? I feel like this is a really nice theme of this conversation, is who you listen to and what advice you take on board.
But I have to say that when I don't know Charlie so well, but Rich, like as soon as I met him, I knew he was kind of a really smart, serious entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And I think he had a really strong financial background as well, which really helped. But I just kind of knew that someone who's given the right product and the right opportunity could do really well.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And the same with sort of Pip and Jimmy's Iced Coffee and all that sort of stuff. It's like it's quite nice almost seeing brands that have kind of slightly like graduated from bread and jam almost. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know, like they kind of come through and then go on, and it's like it's a really like nice, and then you see all these new brands come through. It's this kind of revolving door of brands that kind of, some that go on to make it, some that don't, but yep, to your point, that kind of just natural evolution process of it.
Yep, absolutely
amazing. And so where can listeners find, I like, best place, just head over to the website and buy tickets there?
Yeah, absolutely. So our website, breadandjamfest.com, we've got all about the event there. You can download the show guide and kind of see what's going on. I'm sure there's going to be like content for everyone, and you can also apply to pitch to the retailers on that website as well. And just the kind of thing about the show guide and all the content, like there's so much going on, and if you are coming, like team up with someone else, go through the show guide, divide and conquer, take notes on every session that you can, and share your notes with each other. I plan it beforehand as well, because there's seriously so much. And actually, you're like this, because I know you like a natter, but the one thing that we've changed over the last kind of year is to add more kind of networking breaks, because that is where a lot of the magic happens. So there's a bit more breathing space between some of the sessions to kind of stop and chat to people, because that's the other thing I advise people, like go and hit up random strangers, talk to the person next to you sitting down, because you don't, you know, you never know how they're going to help you. And some amazing collaborations have come from that, partnerships. You never know who you're going to meet, and it might change your business.
Yeah, completely. I think as well, like the atmosphere that you guys create in that, or that is created in that room, is not, there's nothing kind of wanky corporate about it. Like, you can literally go up and be like, "Hey, I'm Harry," and they'll be like, "Oh, hi, how you doing?" Like, it goes back to that graduation, pass the baton. Like, everyone in that room is really happy to help, because that's why everyone's there.
Absolutely. You know, our main branding and design of the place is balloons, for God's sake. Like, how more uncorporate.
I love it.
We've got balloons everywhere. We don't want to make it look wanky and corporate.
No. It's not at all. And look, it's been amazing, the evolution of the festival to some of the guests that you guys have now in that headliner stage, right the way through to the shop talk and all that sort of stuff. It's such a great little bit. And look, we can't have you on the podcast without talking about your most recent sort of startup. It's super exciting. Give us the warts and all, how it's going.
The warts and all. Well, I suppose I'll tell you kind of where the idea came from. Me and another guy, Shagan, spent quite a lot of time looking at the plant-based category. We kind of worked on a plant-based burger, bleeding burger, just before lockdown, and that kind of, to try and get into food service, that didn't happen. Then we spent quite a lot of time making a vegan scrambled egg. So we spent like a year developing that, and we were just using a load of crap ingredients to try and mimic an egg. It's not easy to make something scrambled. It was full of starches and gels and gums and methyl cellulose, and by the end of that, it didn't taste good, and I was just like, what the hell are we doing, man? Like, why are we this? The plant-based category is full of stuff that is ultra processed, full of junk, but the main driver to it is still health. People are trying to eat plant-based because they want to be healthy, yet the category is not delivering on that. So I was like, let's do something all natural. Let's do tofu made with veg. Like something versatile, something really simple. And so we came up with the concept and got another amazing co-founder involved, Simon. We've developed this high protein, high fiber veg block. You can slice it and fry it. You can put it in wraps. You can put it in curry sauces. You can even crumble it over macaroni cheese. All natural ingredients. It's made with things like lentils and quinoa and flax seeds, and so it's got a long ingredients deck, but all things that you could buy in a supermarket yourself. Minimally processed, so it's a banging product. It's totally on trend, because you know everyone's talking about that. The buzz in the plant-based category is the ultra processed. That's stopping a lot of people buying stuff there. And the supermarkets are very keen to kind of bring veg and beans back to the center of plate.
Love it.
For sustainability reasons, for health reasons. And so we're talking to the retailers at the moment. It's a kind of high volume product. So we need a big customer on board to kind of to press the button. But we're having good conversations. I'm really enjoying working with Shagan and Simon. You know, that's kind of one reason why I'm doing it. I think it's really important to go on a venture with people that you like, and they're like super, super knowledgeable. And so I'm really excited about it. It's a product that, you know, when it's in my fridge, it doesn't stay there for long, because I'm, you know, properly eating it, and I love it. Really believe in it.
Amazing. I'm all the best with it, because I think it's wonderful, and I think that full circle of plant based is really starting to happen, right? Where I saw something the other day that was like, I can't remember who it was. I think it was some random like Nigel Owens who used to be a rugby referee, and he's now a farmer. And he said something like, the people who are trying to ban British meat farming for meat substitutes, you're actually going to find that it's like more unsustainable to create meat substitutes in terms of what we're doing to the planet than it is to just farm meat. And that, now this isn't a pro meat or anti meat message. It was just something where I was like, how have we got ourselves as a society into that situation? And so you guys bringing it back to going like, these are just ingredients that we already use, we just cleverly put them together, I think is really great.
Yeah. The quite controversial thing that he said, and I'm not sure that I totally agree. There's a lot of discussion around it, because we do need to eat less meat.
Of course we do, yeah.
But yeah, interesting but discussion.
It's an interesting view. It's an interesting viewpoint, and I don't know what the answer is to that. But it's I think the point of coming back to not creating like lab-based products is kind of where that's going to go, right? If you look at the demise of some of the alternative meat products, I think it's going to be a really interesting space. The rise of what you guys are doing, the rise of Bold Bean, and what they're doing with their like sort of key ingredients, all that sort of stuff.
Absolutely, it's got to happen. I went to a brilliant conference last week called Groundswell. I don't know if that was on your radar.
Mariana was there as well, wasn't she? Yeah.
Oh, it's brilliant, man. Like, farming is so central to a lot of our issues in the UK, whether it's obesity, whether it's climate change, whether it's supply chain, whether it's rewilding. You know, it's really fundamental, and it's got a huge role to play. And there's a lot of debate there about kind of like eating less meat and dairy. But
I think the whole thing, I mean, this moves us on to a completely different conversation, but I think the way that the UK, why I love so much what like Oddbox does, and I think there's just the education of like farm to fork has just completely disappeared. Like you will have consumers in the UK that will go and buy like McCain's frozen chips and won't put two and two together that potato is in the ground at some point. It's just lost completely, and that's where I think the real issue starts from. I remember Jack Scott came on the podcast, and he was talking about his parents have a farm, and they won the potato contract for McCain's, and they would grade potatoes, and ones, bearing in mind McCain's would just chop them up for chips, and even then like they'd have to throw away potatoes because they weren't big enough or they were in a different shape, and you're like, hold on a second, you're chopping these up to then put them in a bag, to then put them in a freezer, and you're still saying no to like certain types of potatoes. It's just insane.
Just insane. Yeah, we need to get our kids to reconnect with nature, man. I agree. And I think that's one of the tragedies of factory farming. Like it's a black box. We don't see how these animals are being treated, and we're happy to turn a blind eye.
To
a lot of it. I mean, I'm all for like, I think it's natural to eat meat and you know, but keep it high quality, grass fed. Organic, if you can. It's very expensive, but it should be a treat. But there's that's another topic for another day.
Our grandparents, I remember my nan saying to me, like, she's not around anymore, but she, when she was alive, she like fish and chip Friday used to be a thing, because you would only have like your meat or your fish at the weekend because it was a special treat. But just really quickly on that point, Mark, we've come back to see my parents, as I said before, and my dad started growing a little vegetable patch out the back. Nice. And like, we took, my little one's only 6 months old, but we took her around to see it, and it's a small little sort of, I don't know, there's some strawberries there and a little like sort of bits of kind of lettuce and stuff like that. It's nothing massive, it's just in a small little pot out the back. But it's really nice to see, and I've kind of like missed that. I've never really seen that before, where you sort of go out and just like put your own lettuces and stuff. So no, it's wicked.
Nice.
Okay, cool. We're digressing. But so, Bread and Jam, people can find it on the website, find you best place to find you, LinkedIn?
Yeah, absolutely. Hit me up on LinkedIn. Yeah, always keen to chat to people. Cool. Come to the event. We got, you know, to plug some other stuff that we're covering. We do stuff on how to speak to buyers, how to do your margins, exporting, logistics, Amazon, Shopify web shops. There's something for everyone. And we have this, the kind of heart of the event is the exhibitor marketplace, where we have about 70 businesses that support food and drink entrepreneurs. So from branding agencies to lawyers, to packaging, to IP, Amazon, logistics, loads of people who can support you on your journey. So yeah, if you've got any questions, drop us a note, hello@breadandjamfest.com. Happy to answer any questions. And I would love to see you there. And then later on in the year, we got a plant-based summit. So a plant-based one-day event, which is our third annual one. And then we'll have a Christmas party later on in the year. Did you come to the last one?
I did, yeah. I was, because it was early in December, wasn't it? It was like the second or third. And the due date for Olivia was like the 9th or 10th. And I remember being there, being like, oh, fuck it up. This is like, Harry, you're really pushing the boat out, going to Christmas party.
But it was nice, great memories.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Good.
I love the community, mate. I think everything you guys have done with our community is wicked. And that's why I really wanted to get you involved in the podcast and sort of on and to become kind of, supporters of the podcast is great. So, okay, amazing. All right, dude. Well, look, I'm gonna leave you to it because you need to get ready for an exciting evening ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to the Grocer Awards tonight at the Royal Albert Hall. Never been invited before. Rented my tuxedo, so that should be good.
Oh, mate, that's going to be fantastic, isn't it? That's going to be a real, real event. Make sure you get stuck in. I'm sure we'll be lots of nice boots going around as well.
For sure.
Okay. All right, dude. Well, thanks so much. Just so, Brendan, it's 18th, 19th of July, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Amazing, guys. Get in touch with it. It is. Wonderful. I can't tell you how much it's helped me in the past. Jason, thanks so much for coming on Told, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure as always, and we'll chat soon.
Nice one, Harry. Thanks for all your support, mate. Really appreciate
always.
It.
Always. Take care. Ta-da.
Cheers. Thank you so much for giving us your time and listening. I really hope you've enjoyed. If you have enjoyed, please, please, please do download, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your friends' friends, tell your friends' mum's dog. It all really helps grow the podcast, ultimately bring on more guests, which will be able to get us to give across more tangible takeaways. Thank you so much again. I'm Harry Turpin, your host, founder of The Savourists. We love you lots. Take care. Keep drinking.